Turn in your Bibles to Matthew 6. Thank you for coming tonight. I'm so glad you're here. God is so good. Do you believe that He's all that you need? Are you sure? Are you sure? How many of you are distressed over the economy and what may happen? Then you don't believe He's all you need. I don't know where I was going. I was flying someplace across the United States, west to east. I wish I could remember where I was headed. But I was thinking about that reality. Jesus is all I need. When in the plane, He appeared to me standing in the aisle. And I looked at Him. And I don't know how to explain how He does this kind of thing in the Spirit. I only know that He does it. And He is standing there and making, it's like this reality, He is all I need, is becoming so evident by His personhood that I began to weep. And I realized He did it gradually because I couldn't have handled it had He done it suddenly. He did it gradually. And the more I saw that He was sufficient, the all-sufficient one, that He really is all I need. The more I saw that, the more pictures would begin to flash through my mind about all that I thought I needed to add to the all-sufficient one. So then that made me weep. Because we do that, don't we? We had so much, and it's all baggage. If we could ever really allow Him to change our heart, to alter our reality, so that we could see and understand from His perspective, not just see, but live in the reality that is all we need. Life would change. Life would change. Are you glad you're here tonight? Did the Lord minister to you through the worship service? Good. He's a good God. Are you at Matthew 6? Jesus is telling the people there on the Sermon on the Mount that there is a better way to pray. That there... Just think about this for a moment. You're a Jewish person. You're living in Israel. For quite a long time, there has been a stir and talk about the Messiah. But in the meantime, there's been a growing hunger in the hearts of your people to experience the salvation of Yahweh. You go to the temple once a year. You see the money changers. You see their irreverence in the temple. Yet, there are memories of the stories that your parents used to share with you about what it was like when the Shekinah visited our people. And you remember, in particular, that one incredible story about when Solomon built the temple. Everything was made ready. And the Shekinah descended. And the priest could not stand even to minister. You know how real he has been to past generations. You look at the temple, you go in as far as you can, and you know way back there in the back, there is a place where God dwells. And you've never seen him. Others have seen him. The reports live through history. But you have never seen him. You believe that he answers prayer because he sends an angel to trouble the waters and the crippled are healed. There are always stories of God's intervention here and there throughout the land. So you know that he's real. But you personally have never felt his touch. And you've never even so much as seen the cloud of his glory. But you've been with this Jesus for a while now. And when he talks about him, you feel like you have seen him. You feel like you know him because of what Jesus says. It's obvious that Jesus has seen the Father. It's obvious that he knows him. So, is the problem that you don't know how to pray right? Or is it as it has always been, that the God of the Hebrew visits only certain people? Only those special ones, those chosen ones, are allowed to experience and to see the Holy One of Israel. What is it? You've wondered many years. And there has been this hunger, growing hunger, also for many years. And the more the people talk about the coming Messiah, the more hungry you become. But so far, the hunger hasn't been satisfied. You're walking with Jesus. He's so different. He's so unique. Not like any other man you've ever met. Not like any other man you've ever seen. Not just because he does great miracles. Not just because he does awesome healings. But there's something unique about him. The way he relates to people. The way he deals with people. When he speaks of the Father, he speaks with such authority. Not like the scribes and the Pharisees. But there's an authority. He seems to carry authority so nobly and yet so humbly. He seems to provoke every place he goes. Seems like the world would love him. But life with him seems to be a life of contention. And the ones who should be embracing him the most, and you wish they would, are the ones who are rejecting him the hardest. But he doesn't weaken his stand on righteousness and love of the Father. He reminds you a bit of the prophets that you've heard tell about. The prophets of days gone by, they were like that, stalwart, immovable. Not like a reed blowing in the wind. How many times you've tried to imagine what it would have been like to walk with a mature prophet. And now Jesus is here. And is he the Messiah? Or is he just the prophet? One thing is for sure. There is no doubt. The one who walks and stands before you knows God. Can you visualize all that? Can you put yourself in their place? Jesus, knowing their thoughts and knowing their hearts, knowing their desires, knowing their needs, says, pray therefore like this. Our Father, who is in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. What thoughts that might provoke. What does he mean by that? Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. What is heaven like? How is the Father's will done there? What is the difference between there and here? Do we do the Father's will? Are we not doing the Father's will? We are his people. We are his chosen people. Can you visualize it all? Can you put yourself in their place? What does he mean? Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. By now, you're quite sure he knows what he's talking about when he says that. But all the questions that you want to ask. Have you ever thought, if Jesus ever appeared to me, I've got 1,000 questions I want to ask him. I used to feel that way, and I made up my list. And I think, the next time the Lord appears to me, I'm going to go down the list and ask all the questions and write it while he's there. But you know, every time he would appear to me, I'd never have my list. And I noticed another thing. Not only was my list never handy, but he controlled where my thoughts went. So I didn't even think about the list until he was gone. He took complete control of the conversation, complete control of my thoughts, complete control of what he wanted to have accomplished. You know, there's never been one of those conversations. Well, I can't say never, but only once or twice. Has there ever been those times when he's come and said, now what would you like to ask? The one good thing about that is that I find myself asking at his will things I would never know to ask and getting answers I would never know that I needed had he not taken control. But the bad side is some of those questions still have not been answered. So they're hearing him, they're seeing him. Oh, can you feel the love that this incredible being was provoking in their hearts? Their love for the Father, their love for him. When he would speak about the Father, the love that would well up in their hearts. And I'm sure that if they felt anything like I feel, sometimes their hearts would feel like they were going to explode with love for him. May I just inject something here? See, this is the fallacy of the church. The world, you expect them to try to draw you to themselves. Am I right? Because they don't know any better. But you would hope that the church, at least its leaders, could somehow taste God enough that they would never want to draw the people to themselves, but always to Christ, who would in turn draw them to the Father. But even if the leaders didn't know how to do that, still that doesn't negate the responsibility of every Christian coming to that place where you are no longer attempting to draw people to yourself. Your every word, your every action, your every breath is a desire to lift him up so high, to reveal him in such glory, that all people everywhere who know you are drawn to the love of the Father. But that's how Jesus walked. Now don't start feeling so guilty you can't listen to the rest of the message. It takes a lifetime to come into, you know, those beautiful places in God. But there is the striving that the Bible does tell us we need to enter into. Strive to enter into the rest. So here we have Jesus. His love for God was so contagious. His disciples felt it growing in their heart day by day, even hour by hour. You know, it gets that way, doesn't it? When you're with someone who loves Jesus with all of their heart, you find yourself loving him more than the day before. Because love for God is magnetic. It draws people who really want him to love him more because you do. And that's what was happening to them. His love for God was contagious. So I can imagine that when they would occasionally go home to see their wife and he was not there, that it was slightly miserable. I mean, sure, they would love being with their wife, but there was an epidemic going on. And the epidemic was an epidemic love for God. It was swelling in the land. It was swelling in them. They would get up in the morning for one reason, to happily kiss the wife goodbye very quickly and get on with business with the Lord. It was swelling in them, the love for God, the knowledge that there was something beyond the temporal life that they had ever known before. There was something beyond fishing. There was something beyond, you know, sitting around together telling the bad jokes while you fix the net. There was something beyond the life that they had ever lived before. And this love for God swelling, swelling every day. Do you think this is not true? It was true. Every day. But not in them only. All of those who followed closely were learning a love for the Father that they had not had before. Israel is a land, please say this with me, Israel is a land of revelation. Those words are straight from the Father's mouth. Not was, but is. Israel is the land of revelation of the Father. I suppose if you're only even slightly prophetic and you went to Israel, you would see more than you see here. Because America is not the land of revelation. God ordained it from the beginning of time that it would be Israel. So although I see here, when I'm in Israel, it is like an ongoing experience. He may appear to me one time a day, two times a day, three times a day. The revelations are just ongoing. Because I'm under the fountain. Israel is a land of revelation. Doesn't it make you want to go to Israel?
Yes.
Think about this. Think about this for a moment. These men were walking day and night with the revelation of the Father. Every word out of his mouth was the revelation of the Father. Every word out of his blessed mouth was another key to understanding God, understanding the kingdom, understanding God's plans and purposes. Think about it. Doesn't it make you feel a little jealous? I cannot imagine. And how can you know God and not fall more deeply in love with him every day? And the more you love him, the more you want to be separated from the world. You want to be separated from the ways of the flesh, the ways of the soul, the old ways of responding to things and to people and to circumstances. You really do want to be changed so that you can know him more deeply. Am I right? Pray therefore like this. Our Father, who is in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Years ago, I've shared this with some of you, but I feel very strongly I'm supposed to share it again tonight. Where is God going? He's going to a place, in one respect, he has been before. In another respect, he's going to a place he's never been before. Now let me clarify that with just a few words. He has done what he's going to do with a few. But the days are coming when it will be many. Many will have the privilege of walking with the Father the way the Lord Jesus Christ did. Many. Many years ago, the Lord spoke to me and he asked me a question. He said, would you like to come to know and love me as my son did when he was here on this earth? What do you think I said? I said, that's not possible. Can you imagine telling God that? Isn't he the one that spoke all things? How does that scripture go? All things are possible. That's not possible. It's certainly not part of the all things. It's not possible. He asked me a second time, would you like to come to know and love me as my son did when he was here on this earth? Again I said, God, that's not possible. I felt it very important to help him understand. So he asked me a third time, Nita, would you like to come to know and love me as my son did when he was here on this earth? By now, I'm feeling rather passionate. And I said, God, that is not possible. Yes, Jesus was all God, all man, but he was also all God. I am not. That is not possible. So he left off. 6 months later, I'll try to make this short because we're getting into deep waters here in this message. 6 months later, he came to me again, asked me the same question three more times. And three more times, I answered him the same way. Aren't you glad that I'm the one that's teaching this study? Mighty woman of faith and valor. 6 months later, he came to me again. Now, mind you, by now, I've had 1 year to think about this question. Nita, would you like to come to know and love me as my son did when he was here on this earth? 1 year I've had to think about it. And I said, Lord, that's not possible. It's not possible. Nita, would you like to come to know and love me like my son did when he was here on this earth? Lord, that is not possible. Jesus, yes, he was all man, but he was also all God. How could I ever have a relationship with you like he did? It's not possible. Nita, would you like to come to know and love me as my son did when he was here on this earth? And then it clicks. I bet you thought it would never happen. It clicks. And I said, wait a minute. You have asked me that question 3 times. And on each occasion, 3 times. Lord, that makes 9 times. Now I'm teaching God math. 9 times you've asked me that question. If you were going through all of that trouble to ask me that question 9 times, it must mean it's possible. And those words went in very deep. I said, you know me better than I know myself. If you are saying that that kind of walk is available to me, I will do whatever you ask. I will give you whatever you require. Whatever you demand of me, it is yours. I will do anything to walk with you in that way. All right then, you shall have it. Sometime later, I'm worshiping the Lord, and he appears to me. And when he appeared to me, Some are going to be very offended with this, but I'm going to ask you to put your robes of self-righteousness down. Take them off. God knows how to teach. He appeared to me and he was very fat. He looked like he was about 500 pounds large. I looked at him and I chuckled. And I said, Jesus. Now, I'm not being irreverent. I want to remind you, it was he who appeared to me that way. Jesus, you're so fat. And I laughed. He smiled. And I said, you're so fat. And he was about 500 pounds fat. I was in awe. I didn't know what to do. I was perplexed. Why is he standing in front of me 500 pounds fat? So I said it again. And he was fat. 500 pounds fat with truth. And it was amazing to behold. The one standing in front of me was the living Word. And it wasn't like I could see Scripture going through him like, you know, thou shalt not kill, you know, love the Lord your God. It wasn't like that. I don't even know how to explain to you how I saw living truth standing in front of me. And it, living because it was ever moving through him. Like a living essence. It was overwhelming. He was 500 pounds fat with truth. When he had made his point, that began to subside. And love began to come front and center. Not human love, but divine love. Not the, you know, not the groping, grasping love of human beings, but divine love. Suddenly, he was no longer living truth, but he was the very essence of love, divine love. Then that began to subside, and what came front and center was, I think it was joy. Not joy like you would know on a natural level, but his joy was bubbly joy, effervescent joy. I even said to him, Lord, you were so filled with joy when you walked on the face of the earth. I don't know how you walked on the ground. Because he was so filled with joy, he was like a helium balloon. And he chuckled. Then that began to subside, and what came front and center was peace. He then became peace. Not like the world gives. Have you ever, since you've been saved, found yourself in the middle of a horrendous crisis, and then suddenly peace comes over you that is unexplainable, and you know it's going to be all right? He walked in divine peace. Then that began to subside, and what came front and center was kindness. He became the very essence of kindness. Then that subsided, and then gentleness. Like this, you know, one coming up, and he became that, and then going back down. And then the next coming up, he became that, and then that going down. Until I saw all nine fruits of the Spirit. Now, how do you see, how do I tell you, for instance, what love looks like? I don't know how to tell you that. But I can tell you it has a look, because I saw it. After he took me through all of this, then he said to me, "Nita, come and stand beside me." So I rose up and I stood beside him, and his hand reached out and wrapped around my waist. It was actually like a hand from his spirit. I don't know how to explain it. And the minute that happened, everything that was inside of me, all of my human passions, all of my naturalness, all of my, you know, my humanity decked with the sinful nature, went down, 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 and out my feet. Like water, you know, leaking out of a bottle. There was an emptying of all that I was. Down, 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 and out my feet. And the minute I was empty, everything that was going on inside of him began to fill me. His love, his joy, his peace, his gentleness, his kindness, his goodness. Everything that was going on inside of him began to fill me. But not only all those things, but also living truth. I was taken out of the realm of the temporal while here on this earth. My soul was now filled with the nature and character of Jesus Christ. I knew I was here, but I was totally incognizant to my own existence. I don't know how else to explain it to people, but it was like Jesus had unzipped me and walked right inside of me. Everything that was me was gone, and now he is living his life out through me. And this is what is known as the exchanged life. This is what every Christian is called to. This is what is available to every human being that gets saved. This is not just for me. It's for anyone who will. After experiencing all of this, love, joy, peace, gentleness, you know, all of it, he looked at me and he said to me, "Would you like to live here with me?" And I said to him, I was shocked, because it is an entirely different reality of life than Christianity is today. In this life, you are no longer living for Christ. You know, Christians live for him, and they do it with great struggles. Am I right? But when you enter into this place, you're no longer living for Christ. He is living his life out through you. It's an entirely different matter of existence than what the church lives today. Nita, would you like to live here with me? I was shocked. I said, you mean it is possible for a human being to live in this place with you? Now, one thing you will learn about the Lord is that when he asks you a question and you answer his question with a question, he will not respond. He has already placed his question, and he's now waiting for not another question, but an answer. So he stands there and he looks at me, and I am so shocked. I'm like stymied. Lord, you're saying it is possible for a human being to live in this place with you? And again, he doesn't answer. He's waiting for my answer. And then I said, Lord, you know me. Whatever you would ask would be yours. Whatever you would require of me, I would give. Whatever you would demand, I would do. If I could live in this place with you. All right then, you shall have it. What a wonderful life. That was followed by another visitation, which I won't go into tonight. But at the end of that visitation, he said to me, Nita, anyone who will can have this place in me. Notice, he did not say anyone who wants. Many want. Few will pay the price. I'm not going to tell you tonight there's no price. Salvation is free, but everything else in the kingdom has a price. You're not required to pay what I pay. You're only required to pay what he asks of you. I'm not required to pay what you pay. I'm only required to pay what he asks of me. But I will say this. What he does require of everyone is that you be willing to give up the world. And if you will give up the world, you can have all of God. This is where he's going. There are those who have walked with him like this through history. Before he left me, he told me that. And he said to me, I'm going to show you in my word where different individuals entered into this place with me. And I'm also going to move on people to send you books of saints from past generations who have entered into this place with me. And I'm going to do that to encourage your faith so that you will always know that the offer I've made to you is real and you really can have it. So he took me through quite a schooling, teaching me how saints in the Word entered into this divine place in him. Paul calls it the rest. Maybe I should say not Paul, because we really don't know who wrote the book of Hebrews, but maybe what I should say is Jesus called it the rest, because in that particular visitation, that's what he referred to with me. This is the rest, he said. This is what it means to enter into the rest. Why? Because you are no longer striving to live for Christ. but you have ceased from all of your labors, and Christ is now living his life through you. You're back to where it was before the fall. You can have this place. Few in the past have had it, comparatively speaking, because it wasn't time. But today, the Lord wants to raise up a whole community of believers to walk in this place. He destined it before time ever began, that there would be those who would love him so much that they really would let the world go, leave the world behind, and go deep in God, so that he could crucify their sinful nature and take up residence in their soul. You say, well, Jesus came into my heart when I got saved. Well, that's why the invitation's open to you, because he's in your heart. You're saved. But that experience was a spiritual experience. In other words, he came and he took up residence in your spirit. But to dwell in your soul, he has to remove all corruption, which also means the removal of the sinful nature. That nature that was passed down to all humanity through the fall of Adam. When that is what I was experiencing, when everything that was in me went down, 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 out my feet. It's called self-emptying, where all of the self-life is emptied out so that the Christ life can enter into his place of dwelling, the inner sanctuary of your soul, and live his life. It's no longer I, but what? Christ what? Is that the word? Is it truth? Now I've just told you what it means. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Aren't you tired of fighting for your will? How many times after you got it did it stink? How many times after you put the quail in your mouth did you wish you hadn't bothered? Aren't you tired of fighting everyone that doesn't agree with you? Aren't you tired of fighting circumstances you can't win? Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Quit fighting for your own will. Quit fighting. May I say it again? Quit fighting for your own will. Quit. Can I tell you what it gives birth to, or do you already know? It's rottenness in the bones. Not only quit fighting for your own will, but quit fighting to impose your will on others. May I tell you, that will never get you into the things of God, because your will is the will of the world. It's diametrically opposed to heaven's will. How do I know? Because it is the mind of the flesh. And the flesh has never wanted the things of God. He works to strengthen your will, to align it with his will. This is the ministry of the Holy Spirit. But he only can do this in those who want his will more than they want their own. The battles between God's will and your will are frequent, and they can at times even be violent. Your flesh is very demanding, as is mine. And even if it wasn't, your soul is. Your soul wants supremacy. It wants to rule and reign. And if you're a Christian, and especially if you're a Christian leader, it's not difficult to begin to believe that your will is always God's will. Try to fight that. So the word must come in, and it must cut asunder between soul and spirit. Why? So you can understand and discern what is soul and what is spirit. And the more you discern it and understand it, the more you will understand God's will versus your will. And the more you understand that, the more you will understand that 99% of your Christian walk has been lived by your will and not his. But he's so loving. He's so gracious. He's so patient. I can tell you 9 times in 1.5 years he said to me those words. And he never, not even 1 time, was there a change in the inflection of his voice. Each time he spoke to me, it was with the greatest, you know, encouragement and invitation. Never did he sound impatient. He's patient. And this is the way it goes. You're going to, if you want to make the trek, you're going to start off and you're going to fall. Isn't that encouraging? And he'll help you get up, and you will fall again, and he will help you get up, and you will fall again, and you will get very discouraged, and he'll encourage you, and he'll help you get up, and you will fall again. This will happen many times. I have never met anyone yet. Of course, I've only met just a few that have ever entered into that place. But none of them did it easily. It's not easy. It's simple, but it's not easy. So he helps you, and he helps you, and he helps you. And he doesn't get impatient with you. But the other side of it is, if you don't really want it, you'll never have it. So why should he get impatient with you? If you really want it, he knows you're going to stumble, because it takes time for the spirit to get strong enough, say strong, and wise enough, say wise, to want to walk dominated over your soul. It takes time. I don't mean 2 or 3 months. I don't mean 1 year. I don't mean 5 years. It takes time. So he's very, very patient. But at the same time, he does know your real heart. And if you don't really want it, you're never going to pay the price for it anyway. So why should he get angry? If you want it, he knows he has to be patient, because the flesh is weak. If you don't want it, why get upset with you? You're the one that is suffering the loss. Where's God going in this hour? Listen to me very carefully. His kingdom is going to come. And his kingdom is going to come, first of all, in those who are willing to pay the price. His kingdom cannot come in the earth except through his people. He will work marvelous works in the world, but it's all conjoined to the life of his people. So for his kingdom to come on earth, as he has predesigned, it must come, first of all, through his people. In his people, through his people. So the invitation is out there to arise and enter in. The invitation is out there. And it's out there to anyone who will. Anyone who will what? Pay the price and let go of the world. People have said to me, well, I want God that way, but do I have to walk with him like you? Meaning me? And in some respects, I say, no. While in other respects, I cannot say anything but yes. Because we all have to do the same thing. We have to leave the world behind. If we want God. Now he knows how to eject the world from you. And he knows how to get rid of it from me. And there are things that will affect you that wouldn't affect me. There are things that will affect me that won't affect you. So some things are different. But by and large, it's pretty much the same. There's one road out of the world. Do you know what the name of that road is? That's right. It is the road of holiness. Holiness and love. You learn love. He's a wonderful God, isn't he? He's a wonderful God, isn't he? Yeah. Father, help us to want your kingdom. Help us to want that your kingdom will come and your will be done. In us. Help us to want life in you as it was meant to be. Help us to leave the shallow Christianity behind and go into the place you created us to walk. Help us to give up all the hindering forces, Lord, that enter our life for the sake of the prize of the high calling of God in Christ. Help us to become people of prayer, crying out to you day and night, I want union. I want union with Christ. I want your kingdom to come in me, Lord. Teach me how to walk with you. And then open your word to help us understand what walking with you really means. Help us to look at the life of Christ and know that we must emulate it until it becomes us. And help us, give us grace to see where it has not been realized in our life and yet faith to believe that it can be. The time is short. The calling is clear. The power to manifest is great. Enlarge our faith, Lord.